This show is brought to you by Carbonite Backup Service and GoTo Assist Express. It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 370. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have a great voicemail for tonight that I'm going to play in the beginning of the show. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and you can send me a friend request, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. Great show lined up with some email, voicemail, and a couple reminders that I have Josh Hummel, my friend, attorney, will be on a special edition of the Mike Tech Show on Saturday, August 27th at 2 o'clock p.m. And we're going to cover the legal implications of starting a business. We're going to talk about LLC versus sole proprietor, contracts, anything legal involving tech. We're going to talk about encryption. We got lots of great topics planned for that special show, so please join me live. And if you can't, don't worry. It's going to be a regular Mike Tech Show in the feed. I am going to be speaking at two groups over the next few weeks. This coming Tuesday night, August 23rd, at the Princeton PC Users Group, and also at the Ewing Computer Learning Center, and that's on September 6th. So I'll have links to both those organizations in the show notes. For your off-site backup needs, there's many choices, but the best one is Carbonite Online Backup to protect your pictures, your files, everything that's important to you. You got to get them backed up off-site in case there's a disaster. I don't care whether it's a server, a workstation, whether you're at home, whether you're at work, you got to back up your files to somewhere in the cloud. Well, why not Carbonite, which is a great backup service, and it's $59 a year. That's less than $5 a month. Go to carbonite.com, and with no credit card, you can have a 15-day trial. And if you like it, use the code TPN, and you get 2 free months. So that's carbonite.com. Try it out right now. You will love it as your offline backup. I have a very important voicemail I want you to listen to that Kate recorded and sent me. It's a scam that I haven't heard of that has been happening in Canada and other countries, and it's starting to get some steam. I really felt that all of you, the Mike Tech Show family and listeners, should give a listen to this. This is pretty scary. You remember the old days when you didn't know and you could open up attachments and people would just send stuff and people would open the attachment because, oh, I got an email and I got an attachment. You open it up, boom, you get hit with a virus. Well, how about computer scams where they're calling you up? Give a listen.
Hi, Mike. It's Kate Ster calling you from Kelowna, British Columbia, up here in Canada. I'm not sure if you guys back home are starting to see this, but we're being hammered here in Western Canada now with the fake Microsoft technician telephone scam. It's amazingly effective. They're running it out of a call center in India using the digital equivalent of a reverse directory. So they'll cold call people. They'll have their name and address. They'll say that they're from Microsoft or from a Microsoft support team. They will tell the Mark that there's many problems or many viruses on their computer, and what they'll do is get them to go to the event viewer and look at those event logs. Now, if you think about it, if you don't know anything about computers or you've never looked at an event log, and then one day you do, it kind of scares the heck out of you. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to scare them. That then is a way to have the scammer convince the Mark to give them access, remote access to the computer, so they get you to go to log me in 123, grant remote access, and then they're in the computer. What they do is run a cleaner or, run something that scrolls a screen, even in a command window, so that it looks very technical and impressive. I had one customer who granted them access, and they removed his Trend Micro antivirus and replaced it with a different product that was going to prompt them in another 30 days for his credit card information. I mean, this is pretty bad. The whole thing that they want is credit cards. So they'll run all these cleaners and do all this stuff, and then they'll sell you protection. They'll sell you a year of protection or 2 years of protection, and they'll take your credit card information right over the phone. Isn't that convenient? Now, I've had a couple of people who've actually given them credit cards, and so the first thing I tell them is talk to your credit card company and call me back when you've done that, and we'll set up a time for me to come over and follow up. If they haven't actually given them the credit card, then I'll set up an appointment and I'll go over and I'll follow up. But I've been running malware scans, looking for rootkits, looking for anything that might be left behind that's like a backdoor, checking the security settings. Now, like I say, I'm finding sometimes they've changed the antivirus, so you got to pull that out of there and put something else in. I saw system restore was turned off at one point, but I couldn't tell if that was this fake technician guy or if that was always hooped. It's an incredibly effective scam. I'm just wondering if anybody else is seeing it, and if so, are there any other measures that we should be taking? I mean, I'm running the scans, I'm cleaning stuff up as I would after any kind of malware problem. I'm advising them to monitor their credit card and investment and online banking stuff. I'm telling them change all their passwords, even their iTunes password, anything that's tied to money anywhere. Anybody think of anything else? So I'll send you some links to things that explain this more fully. But if you want to have some fun, just go to Google and search on fake Microsoft technician phone scam, because there are YouTube videos of geeks who have been cold called and have kept these guys on the line, and some of those videos are very, very funny. They're not funny if you're the victim of it, but they're funny for the rest of us. Anyway, that's all I've got. If anybody's got any other suggestions, I'd be grateful for them, because, like I say, I've had 4 or 5 calls in the last 2 weeks, and it doesn't look like it's going to let up. Thanks, Mike. Take good care.
Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to put that together and send it to me. And she did that very late at night, her time. I know it was like after 3 a.m. when it appeared in my email when I seen that this morning. So thank you. And it's something that I think bears talking about. where you want to make sure your friends, family, clients, that if this ever happens, someone, Microsoft will never call you. No tech that you haven't heard of that you're not working with will ever call you to do this. And that's what you have to explain to them, because everybody, I would think, listening to the show, or if you're in the chat, you would not fall prey to this. But there are a lot of people out there that will. And think about this. If you've never looked at an event log and you are a novice and you're being told to look at your system event log, you know how scary that is. And there could be a whole bunch of red errors. That's going to frighten someone enough that they are now going to do whatever that person says in order for them to get rid of those errors. This is something that if you're running into this, let me know if you're hearing about this. It's something that, I don't know, my clients, friends, family, I don't know anybody that's ran into this. And when Kate mentioned this when we were talking the other night, and then she has appeared on a local radio show for discussing this that I listened to, I said, boy, if you could record something, I'll include it in the show. Now, Kate does a great newsletter that I am going to link in the show notes. And the newsletter is rlis.com/column.htm. That's her column where you can sign up for her newsletter, and it's called Getting Along with Your Computer. I don't care how savvy you are or how much of an IT pro, Kate goes over the basics. And what I like, her audience is a much older audience that are newbies and novice to computers. What I like, even though there's things that I've known about or talk about, you get some really cool links that you might have forgotten about that you can share with people who need this help. And then you can also get a way to explain to someone else when you're trying to teach the very things that Kate's teaching her subscribers to the newsletter. And sometimes it puts a perspective that you can help describe. I like listening sometimes to basic stuff, like the tech guy, Leo Laporte, his weekend radio show in California. Sometimes the way he explains things simply, it's a way for you to pick it up and then explain things to someone else. That's one thing that I like, that sometimes basic stuff, you're going to hear something that you haven't heard from a long time, and it's going to help you out. And that's what it's all about, picking up and reminding about things. Maybe it was a site that you haven't used in a long time, or you haven't heard of, or something sometimes so simple. I get stuck. My problem when I have an issue on my computer, it's usually something very stupid and very simple, because I'm looking way up here for the solution and I'm missing the obvious when it comes to my problems. When I start diagnosing someone else, I go through the basics. I start, is it plugged in? Is it turned on? Is it, have you rebooted? You got to go through all that first. And sometimes when it's ourselves, we tend to forget about the basics, and that's why it's always easy for someone else to help you than it is to help yourself. Thanks, Kate, for that. For helping someone else and you want to remote in, take a look at someone's computer and help them out, go to Assist Express. There's two things IT professionals and their clients have in common. They want the job done right and they want it done fast. And that's why I recommend Go to Assist Express by Citrix to anyone in IT, because it puts you in complete remote control of your client's computer. Maybe it's a family member's computer. It's your dad or mom at a remote place, and you need to log in and take over their computer and help them out. This is the solution. You can try it free for 30 days by just visiting GoToAssist.com/podcast. See how you can deliver live tech support to anyone, anywhere with GoToAssist Express. Let's get to some email. This is from Dan, and this is about Android tablet imaging. which I'm going to need your help here. Hey, Mike, I'm a longtime listener. Since sometime before the infamous April 1st cat episode. That's a long story by itself if you haven't heard about that. Anyway, we talked a long time ago about Vax VMS and the TI-99-4A. You have saved me many times over and shown me lots of cool things that I use all the time, and I really appreciate it. I buy lots of stuff from Amazon and make sure to use your Amazon links whenever I do. I want to thank everybody who's been using my Amazon links because I really appreciate it. Everybody has been so kind in using my link this month. I really appreciate it. Continue to do it. Thank you very much. Now, back to Dan's question. Here's something that I've never really heard come up anywhere. I work for a fairly decent-sized library district. We have a lot of computers configured as public access PCs in multiple locations. When updating them with a new configuration, we generally set up one PC the way we want it and clone it with some kind of imaging software. The actual software used varies. Sometimes we used Ghost Image for Windows, Microsoft ImageX, and others. Obviously, in the PC world, there are a lot of tools to do it. Some are better in certain situations than others, but the idea is all the same. Configure one, image to many. If a machine fails or gets screwed up, we just image over the top of the hard drive or put a new machine in place and image to that. Now, we're about to get into using Android tablets for our branch staff. Personally, I don't know that I would have chosen the Android tablets over iPads, but that's really a moot point as it wasn't my choice anyway. Someone up the chain bought several Acer Android tablets, and it's up to us to make them work. This brings me to my question. Do you know if there is a way to configure one Android tablet an image or otherwise clone it to several others? I'd prefer to do this without having to root the devices. Any ideas you can give me would be appreciated. Thanks and keep up the good work. I do not know how to image the Android tablet. So here's what I'm going to do. I ask everyone out there, if you know someone who knows how to do this, or if you can do this, let me know so I can pass this on to Dan and I'll talk about it. This is a great question, and I see this coming is going to come more and more as tablets take off. The corporate world, you're going to, and here, even the library district, you're going to want to image them to make them all the same, to have all the options that you want or the software that's set up. You're going to want to image it to roll it out. There's got to be a solution. I just don't know because I haven't been exposed to it. Let's find out. Let's help Dan. Let me know. Send me an email, miketechshow@gmail.com. This question is from Buyer Brown. And he says, hey, Mike, you once talked about an adapter that you add to your mix board that reduces static or hum. What was that adapter? Where did you get it? Thanks and God bless. And I send him a link to where to buy it. It's the Hum X. It's EB Tech Hum X Ground Loop Eliminator. And it's a little adapter. You plug that into the outlet, and the device that is sending the audio, maybe playing music, doing the recording, you plug that in to this eliminator, this hum eliminator, and it eliminates the hum. If you've been a long time Mike Tech Show listener, years ago, there was a ground loop in my setup, and the hum was so terrible. I mean, it was just horrible. And it was that, and it was low, and I couldn't get rid of it. To me, I was very picky. And it depended on how good what you were listening to the podcast on. And if you had a really good headset, you would hear this slight hum, you know, in the background. I couldn't get rid of it. So I'm on a conference call with Todd from Geek News Central and Andy McCaskey, who used to host Slashdot Review. We're on a call for, I think we were going to do a go-to meeting. And it's before the meeting, and I said, "Guys, I got this hum, and I can't get rid of it." And couldn't believe it. They both said at the same time, "Oh, you need the hum eliminator, this little device." And I said, "You're kidding." And they said, "Oh, no, that's it. You buy that, it'll eliminate the ground loop." I bought two, and I plugged them in, plugged one into my mixer, one for the iMac. Guess what? Hum gone. I mean gone. And that is what is perfect if you're doing anything with lots of audio gear and equipment, and you have the ground loop and the hum, this will take care of it. Great question. Thank you for that, buyer. This is a question from Tom, and we went back and forth, and I even have how he solved this. "Hi, Mike. Thanks for all you do, and a special thanks to your family for giving you the latitude to do it. I wanted to create two networks in my home, one for my family, one for visitors. My intention was to allow family to access the internet and the family LAN while allowing visitors to access the internet, but keep them from accessing the family LAN. I created these networks using two routers, both of them WNR 3500Ls. I know this router allows for a guest Wi-Fi network that can't access the local LAN, but I want wired and wireless access for both family and visitors. Both networks work great, but each network can access the LAN of the other. No segregation at all. I did all my testing with my family computers. These all have the same Windows workgroups, Network OS mix, Windows 7, Mint 11, Windows Home Server, and an Unraid server. All are visible and accessible one to the other. How do I get segregation, the segregation I'm looking for?" So I wrote back, I had a couple questions, and he has a cable modem, and then he gives me the family network and its settings and its IP address, and then a separate subnet with the visitor network. So I wrote back to Dan and I said, "Get a cheap 5-port hub. Plug that into the cable modem. Plug each router into the hub. Use a 10.10.10.x for the visitor router and adjust the WAN IP addresses accordingly for the cable modem, and that should do it. Let me know." Tom wrote me back with the following: "Hi, Mike. Just a note to close the loop with you regarding our recent exchange of emails. I was having trouble creating a two-router network where router one can only see itself and the internet of, and router two can see the internet itself and everything on router one. I had created the networks easily enough, but did not have the segregation I was looking for. You suggested putting a hub between router one and the cable modem. That didn't work either, not because it was a bad suggestion, but because on my oversight, I have Hamachi VPN." See, he didn't tell me this. "And the Hamachi VPN installed on each of the computers I used to do the testing. Hamachi is designed to work through and around that routers. So I was always able to see upstream and downstream computers no matter what configuration changes were made. Once I turned off Hamachi on all the computers being tested, I got the desired result. My networks are now segregated. Router 1 friends can only access the internet and other computers on the subnet. Router 2 is for family and can access the internet computers on its subnet and computers on routers 1 subnet. All is well. Thanks again for your help." The reason why I wanted to take everybody through that is it's a great idea for separating networks. Now, another way to do this, I have a business client that has a business Comcast router. They have a corporate router that takes that information, and then they have their own IP scheme, and it's a private network, and they're not allowed wireless on that private network. but they want to offer public wireless for clients and customers coming into the business. And this is not just a walk-in. This is, you know, clients that come in with iPhones or whatever, and they're sitting down with their account rep. And I set up a simple router and plugged it in directly to the Comcast modem. So I'm bypassing the firewall and router of the private network. And I set up a simple router and set up wireless, and bang, we have a accessible wireless with internet only access for all the clients. And it's very easy to set up. And I'm seeing this more and more where homes, businesses, you need multiple networks. It's not enough that we're managing one network. You now have multiple networks where you have the public network and the private network. There's lots of solutions and lots of ways. And I know a few weeks ago we talked about routers that have that. I think that was on Tech Vets. If you have the ability for multiple antennas, multiple SIDs, that's the secure ID that you're looking for that identifies the router. You can have different ones for different networks. So like Dan said in the email, he has a router that actually can handle that from a wireless standpoint. But I thought it was interesting that he wants to add wired networking separate from his family network. And I thought that was kind of cool to be able to offer that to someone coming into the house. Me, I just have the wireless for them. You come into my house, I give you WPA2 ID, and you're on for the wireless. Now, a couple consulting stories from in the trenches, as I call it, this week. I mentioned one of my clients a few weeks ago had a problem with performance. He had a Dell computer, maybe 2 years old, and it was just running too slow. He had 4 gigs of memory, and it was a quad-core CPU. No excuse for running that slow. But now what if I added that it was running Vista Business? I did all of my tuning, all the things that we talk about here on the show. I pulled out all the utilities. I cleaned the registry. I emptied temp files. I ran the MS config and stopped all the unnecessary things from running. And I still started having some bottlenecks. I just tried to open up Word and it was killing me. It was taking too long to open up. And that's when I ran Crystal Disk Info and I seen just a terrible amount of errors. So I told my client to buy a hard drive and Windows 7 Professional. Now he bought the OEM version, which I recommend, of Windows 7 Professional. You can save a fortune by getting the version that is really meant to be sold with a computer. But we were buying the hard drive, and I said, look, we're going to put a new terabyte hard drive in there. I'm going to run Windows 7. And that's what I did this week. One day, I was over my client. He got the components. I backed up his data. I put the hard drive settings. And by the way, I used Rexback to back up all the Internet Explorer settings, which is an incredible program if you're using Internet Explorer. I'm not going to make that mistake again, because there's massive amounts of settings that they have for Internet Explorer. All the zones, just a tremendous amount of security settings. Too numerous to even think of trying to duplicate. Using a program like Rexback, it grabbed everything, put it in a file. I got his data. I then took out the hard drive and popped in the hard drive in like 2 seconds in this Dell system. I was worried about drivers. I take the tag number before I take out his hard drive, and I go into Dell's site, and there's no Windows 7 drivers. They just had Vista 32, Vista 64, and XP. There was none listed for Windows 7, and that scared me. But I went forward anyway. When I put the hard drive in, I took the 64-bit disk that he purchased, popped it in, and I went through the easiest install of Windows 7 that I've ever had. And it literally had the drivers for every single component. I did not have to get one driver at all. They were all set up as part of the install of Windows 7, and it just blew me away. I had very little updates. This had Service Pack 1 already built into the CD. I'm looking at that, or the DVD, and it said with Service Pack 1. I was like, this is great. Popped that in. When that was done, I was shocked when I went to the hardware device manager and seeing that there was no drivers to have to add. So the computer was just old enough that Windows 7 incorporated all the drivers. I really thought I was going to be in for some trouble there. And I just wanted to share that when things go well, you just take it and run. I loaded his data back, then took the settings. Now, he had Internet Explorer 7. And you know, Windows 7 comes with Internet Explorer 8. I did a restore using Rexback with the settings that I had just taken off Internet Explorer 7. It restored beautifully while it upgraded to Internet Explorer 8. So you can take the settings between multiple versions of Internet Explorer. And I'm living proof. I took settings from 7, put them into 8, and I started looking at the settings. They were perfect. And I was able to get onto the corporate website, which, let me tell you, was a challenge if you didn't have those settings. And it was wonderful. So I wanted to share that. And the key, the story here was knowing your client, knowing that there are certain software packages that you absolutely have to have all the settings. And for me, I don't touch any browser anymore without backing it up totally. And I use Rexback for Internet Explorer and Moz Backup for Firefox. They are two key utilities, links will be in the show notes, that are must have on your USB stick. And with that, I am going to play some independent music. The music I selected, an independent artist that I played a long time ago, a few years ago, on a Mike Tech show, and I was going through all my old GarageBand music, and this is Krista Kocher and the song Day 4. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
I cannot sit still. I will twitch. I will travel. I am leaving what remains of me as I unravel. I wander through the side streets, fell in love with Amsterdam, and we weave through the canal. As the night across my hand, in the sounds of early morning, I am sleepless and inspired. I'm swimming in the city's heat, I'm fueling the fire. It's an insight, it's the twilight found somewhere in between. Flight across the ocean and a pot-infused dream, and here I go.
I am a bluebird.
And here I go.
I am a blackbird.
And here I go.
I can fly.
And here I go.
Here I go.
He tells me I'm solid. Says, will you come my way? And I wonder if you knew me better, what else he'd have to say. It's a kiss to lick me up and a hand to help me down. I am giddy with my freedom. I am warming to my soul. Here I go.
Yeah.
Krista Kocher and the song Day 4, and I will have a link to her website. I want to thank you so much for downloading, subscribing to the show, and being part of the Mike Tech Show family. Spread the word. Let people know who don't know about the show. Let them know how to subscribe and send them to the website, miketechshow.com. Thank you so much for your support. I can't say it enough. I really appreciate it, and I will be talking to you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.